Rabbi Bider. He is here in South Africa. He is at Or Samach. And I've asked him the question, how on earth can we be celebrating a festival of freedom whilst we are in lockdown? A very good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Howard. Good morning. How are you doing?
Yeah, excellent. Thank you. So first of all, before we get started on that, you're British. You're from London. It must be quite surreal looking back at what's going on there in terms of the amount of people suffering, unfortunately, the amount of deaths, and now Boris Johnson himself being in intensive care for COVID-19. It has to be very odd and very concerning at the same time.
Indeed. I've got nothing brilliant to say about the situation over there, or nothing that brilliant to say about situations in most places. But when I look at England, yeah, it's interesting. It's fascinating the way they've tackled it. When I compare that to the way it's been tackled in Israel, in South Africa, there is a bit of an English accent to the whole thing over there, which I think is fascinating.
What do you mean by that?
What do I mean by that? So England has always seen itself as a bastion of civil rights. So even when the English are being told that, listen, guys, this is really important for you to stay at home, be sensible, social distance, etc., there seems to be a very strong body of opinion which resents the fact that the authorities are telling them that we need to limit your freedoms a bit. That seems to really fly in the face of what the Englishman is all about. So, for example, I heard there might be a lockdown rebellion whereby people make a conscious effort, make a visible display of the fact that we don't, you know, yes, you're trying to save our lives, but we resent being locked up. So I don't think you'd get that in other countries so much. There's probably more of a sensible aspect to the way other countries behave in these situations. But the English are very into their civil liberties, even at the expense of their health. That seems to be quite fascinating. There's real resistance to the idea of lockdown, not just because of the inconvenience, but what it represents and government intervention in your life, etc., which I've got some sympathy for on some kind of levels. Whatever,
you can have sympathy from the inside of your own house. That's the perfect place to have sympathy, and I don't believe that any country is suggesting that we give up all our civil liberties forever. But certainly, according to very strict Jewish law, saving lives actually is the number one priority and stands above absolutely everything else.
Well, if anything, it's probably led to a slight bias in England in favor of the view that let nature run its course. The academics aren't sure. There is something to be said for everyone just catching it and getting herd immunity. So I think if there's an institutional or national bias towards a certain way of thinking, that probably influences which scientists you want to listen to. Confirmation bias, I think you call it in your book. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there seems to be a bit of a leaning towards that amongst many people in the British media. And that could be, I think that might be more legitimate than just, if it were the case that there was only one opinion out there and they were stupidly resisting that, I think that would be more idiotic on their part. But if there are sort of two schools of thought out there, and there seem to be, because Sweden, for example, and Holland seem to be going down that route, I'm not sure if you're following their approach. Mm-hmm. Are you?
Yeah, I am.
So, yeah, I think there are people in England who prefer that because it kind of fits in with a civil liberties view. But I don't know if you really wanted to talk to me about England, Sweden and Holland.
Well, I'm fascinated to hear that, but no, that isn't our topic. What I want to know from you is how on earth we could celebrate the Festival of Freedom whilst locked in our own home.
Ah, that's a great question.
Thank you very much. I was hoping you'd ask that
at some point. Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed. So I think this corona phenomenon has led to a very different way of looking at the world in so many aspects. Yes, we are physically tied, locked into our homes. There are a couple of freedoms which I don't particularly want to focus on. I'm going to say at the end the one which I think is the most fundamental, the one which has probably affected me the most. I think in ascending order of importance, I think we're free to try new stuff. I think stuff which you wouldn't have been willing to talk about in the past or might have felt a bit uncomfortable talking about, you know, talking about Tikkun Olam, making the world a better place, people who, let's say in America, for example, I read in the Jerusalem Post, I hope that's a reasonably reliable paper, said that 42% of Americans think this is something which is being driven by God. Now, 42% of Americans is a lot of people. That's 120 million people out there. Now, presumably, let's say even if the statistics are way off, let's say if it's 60 million people, well, 1 million of those people probably never felt comfortable talking about God before, and they're free as a result of this to say, hang on, there's something going on here. Let me look at the world with a different set of spectacles on. Maybe this is something to do with God. I feel free to talk about that now. So that's one point which I think is of note. Something else which I think we experience at the moment, I certainly am experiencing it, is a lot of the stuff which I do normally because I think I need to do it. For example, I think that I need to go to Holland and Germany once every 6 weeks or 8 weeks or something like that because I've got some business interest there. I haven't been there for quite a while. Everything seems to be fine. I'm doing my work from here. So I'm actually freer. You know, it's actually the stuff which you can't do, we've actually been liberated from in a way, which is interesting. I think the thing which is most interesting is the fact that I'll talk about this from a, you know, very community orientated view. Community is great and functions are great and simchas are great and shul, going to synagogue, is great. It's fantastic. Now, what that means is that there's a very strong emphasis on getting out of the home and, you know, being part of the community and seeing what the community does. And all too often, I think this is the problem normally, all too often we bounce that back into our home, what the community expects of us, and we apply that sometimes with a one-size-fits-all approach to our kids, to our relationship, to the way that we think our home is supposed to be. And I think really we're a lot more intuitive than that. I think left to our own devices, we can work out what each of our children really needs. And sometimes, you know, we're trying to get our kids or ourselves or our spouses to do these things to kind of fit in with what's expected. And what I find very liberating at the moment is we can leave all that behind and we can say, hang on, there's a real person in front of me. I know what's best for them and I'm not gonna tell them what to do so that they fit in. Now, better among us are always able to do that, are always able to say, well, you know, you're expected to wear a certain, you know, teenage daughter's expected to wear certain clothes. So, you know, I know it's not the right thing for her to make her do that, to force her to do that. So I'm going to sort of let her do her thing. But, you know, maybe sometimes you can't help biting your lip or, you know, maybe at the moment. So there's no community expectations. We can do what we want. We can do the right thing for each kid, which I think, if you're still there, fits in very nicely with a theme, a very, very important theme, which emerges from the Haggadah.
So the one that resonates most for you?
The one that resonates most for me is the fact that we're with our families. There's this whole idea people are making a fuss about. We're at home at the moment. It's so special to spend more time with our families. So, you know, I've tried to work out what does it mean spending more time with our families? If this is indeed so special, what does spending time with our families mean? So, you know, after you've changed 7 light bulbs and you've built that piece of furniture, build-it-yourself furniture that your wife's been looking at you, you know, for 7 years, you've been expected to build this piece of furniture and you found your Allen key and you did it in the end. You know, at a certain point, it's like, okay, well, is there something very meaningful to being at home? And I think there is. I think the very meaningful thing is, if I can borrow a theme from the Haggadah, is that you can look at everyone in your home and say, you know, the bit in the Haggadah about the 4 kids, the 4 sons. I think apart from what the Haggadah is telling us about how each son should be treated, what's noteworthy is that 4 different children are meant to be treated in 4 completely different ways. And we can really look at our relationships at home and do the right thing for each person and for our spouses without feeling the need to fit in, without being erroneously pulled in the wrong direction. Does that make any sense?
It makes a lot of sense. I like it. Interestingly enough, the one that that perhaps maybe resonates more for me was your first one, where you said it's there's almost a freedom now to talk about a belief system that maybe the world made us too self-conscious to speak about. So Nati, what do you think about that? Is that now millions more people are able to say, yeah, you know what?
There's no pressure.
There's no
anymore.
Pressure. And you know what? I can say that this is God-given and I can say that, that we're feeling vulnerable and that this has got to be part of a bigger plan.
Yeah.
Whereas we're always so self-conscious because it seems
everybody else
so unintellectual.
Yes, exactly.
To think that.
Yeah. I think we get to be more woke, basically.
Yeah, we do. Yeah. In an ironic sort of a way. Mm. Sorry, you were saying?
I remember in the second Gulf War, Tony Blair got into a lot of trouble because he had been to America to visit George Bush, George Bush II, and W, that was the name, right?
No,
he'd been to visit W. And he came back to England, and people wanted to know what had happened, what was it all about. Meanwhile, George Bush did the unthinkable. George Bush said that him and Tony had prayed together in the White House, which works in America, but in England, Tony Blair was told in no uncertain terms by his right-hand man, Alistair Campbell, very publicly that we don't do God. You know, we don't do that. That just doesn't work in Europe, in a very secular England. Right. So, you know, Tony Blair wasn't, I didn't think that would have been, I didn't think the same response, would have been generated, you know, yesterday. Boris Johnson is in the ICU, in the intensive care unit. I don't think anyone would, look too harshly upon him if he said, I pray to God that I get out of this situation. I think the G-O-D word would be a legitimate thing to say under these circumstances. And yeah, you know, no atheists in foxholes, that whole kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, okay, if that one resonated more for you, great. I'm enjoying the home thing and the trying to
free of the expectations and free of social pressures, free of everybody else looking from the out in. Rather, you can look from the inward and just stay inward. Very, very good. I really enjoyed that, I must say. Time is about to go, 7:30. Rabbi Bader, thank you for that. Have a Chag Sameach to you and your family.
You too.
And we certainly...
Take care.